Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, sports fans. Host Tom Marquis and the Balance team are ready to break.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it off.
I wish you could just shut your big yapper!
Welcome to the show. We do this thing every Saturday morning called The Balance. That's right, our flagship show, our flagship city, Indianapolis. What a beautiful Easter weekend it is. Hope everybody's ready for a great Easter, getting your Easter egg hunts, ready to go in church and all of that stuff that goes with Easter. But I tell you what, you cannot have Easter weekend without at least starting it right on the Balance Radio Network. Welcome across the United States as we go live across our affiliates across the United States and, of course, certainly our facilitator here on Blog Talk Radio. So glad to have you along and all of our friends, families, and what we like to call the minions here on The Balance. My name is Tom Marquis. I am your fearless leader, El Presidente, and for the next 2 hours, I will guide you through the uncharted waters of the sports stories that have happened this week. And that's right. We're going to be talking about those Indiana Pacers and the NBA playoffs. Finally here, and the Pacers are in it at a number one seed. We're going to get into that conversation. It might not be a conversation that some of you Pacer fans may or may not want to have, but we're excited that the Pacers here in Indianapolis are in the playoffs. And, hey, you know, we know there's other teams in the playoffs, and we're going to talk about that. And we know we're a national show, but we're based here in Indianapolis. So, hey, our love goes out to the Pacers on first. Of course, also, Indianapolis Ice, or Indiana Ice, I should say, is in the playoffs as well. And we're going to have assistant coach for the Indiana Ice, Adam Grogue, going to be joining us later on in the show. Also, to talk some Pacers today, Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show. Going to break down those Pacers, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we've got all of that. And, of course, we've got racing and, you know, we've got NASCAR to talk about. Of course, NASCAR is on a, what we call an off week. They take 2 weeks a year off. They take, those of you that follow NASCAR, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, they take Mother's Day off and Mother's Day weekend off, and they take Easter weekend off. Other than that, pretty much racing every weekend with NASCAR. But we're going to talk about some of the NASCAR stories, what's been going on in NASCAR, of course. We're going to talk about that big race out in Long Beach last week, and it was not without drama in its own right, if you will. And so we're going to be talking about that, certainly breaking down the stories that surround Long Beach, Joseph Newgarden, and Ryan Hunter Ray. That's for sure. 917-889-8516 is my digits. You want to give us a call or a ringy-ding, myself, $2 Bill Josh, be standing by, talk with you about anything sports, and bring it to us. And, you know, first pay homage to us, and then after that, you may kiss the ring and then ask your question. But make sure you bring your A game, because I'll tell you what. This is where it happens, right here on The Balance. So I'm just kidding you. Of course, if you're a sports fan, if you're a fan of the game, you're a fan of The Balance, my name is Saul Mark Wassell, Presidente. Going to take a break. Be right back with today's show right here on The Balance Radio Network.
It's my week, I'm on the run. Dead or alive, they won't catch me.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Soccer is the world's game.
And it has deep roots in Indiana.
It lives in our backyard.
In our rec league.
In nuestras escuelas.
Indy 11 is here.
And make no mistake, this is Indiana's team.
It was built from the ground up.
Brick by brick by soccer fans.
When we take the field next April, we'll be playing for you.
For me. Para mí.
For us.
This is my team.
Este es mi equipo.
This is our team.
This is your team.
It's time.
It's going to be awesome.
I'm going to be there.
Voy a estar ahí. I'll be there.
This isn't just any soccer team. This is Indiana's team, and that includes you.
Race fans, get ready for the 2014 Coors Light Carb Day concert at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, starring the Red Rocker, Sammy Hagar, and the Wobbles. And Sublime with Rome. Friday, May 23rd, Sammy Hagar and the Wobbles. And Sublime with Rome. Get more info at ims.com/carb day.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
For over 100 years, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway has been the epicenter of racing, with the highest forms of motorsports all competing at Indy.
And Tony Kanaan has won the 97th running of the Indianapolis 500.
Over a century ago, the Speedway's designers had visions of a road course nestled inside the famed oval. And now, for the first time ever, the stars of the Indianapolis 500 will also run on the road course circuit.
It's so different than the Indy 500, I don't think it takes away from that. You can't even compare it to the oval. It's so different.
IndyCar drivers are the fastest and most versatile in the world. And now we'll be challenged by the 2.5-mile oval and the road course, both at the racing capital of the world.
Why not use this facility as much as you can? And this makes a lot of sense in my mind, and so if we have a chance to come here and race on the road course, hey, I'm all for it.
Next May, the racing action starts with the inaugural Grand Prix of Indianapolis.
It's pretty physical. There are a lot of fast corners. It's hard on your neck. Heavy braking into turn one. It's a good track.
This history-making event takes the green flag on Saturday, May 10, 2014. For the latest information, go to gpofindianapolis.com.
Verizon to the heart of racing and is proud to announce the Verizon IndyCar Series.
Here's another romantic song by someone with a better love life than yours.
All right, my minions, welcome back to the Balance. My name's Tom Mark Michelle. Josh, can you hear us?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Sorry, we had a bit of technical difficulty there for a minute.
You know what? It was me. You know what always happens? You know, it always does. At least once a show, I forget to turn my mic on. So, hey, I'll take responsibility for that. No wonder you could not hear me. Well, let's start over. Well, welcome back to The Balance. You're on The Balance Radio Network. My name is Mark Wessel, Presidente. And over the next 2 hours, myself and $2 Bill Josh going to be guiding you through these uncharted areas of sports. And we got a lot to talk about today, Josh. Of course, we're going to be talking about those Indiana Pacers. And Josh, I know you're nipping at the butt. You're biting on your sugar cube there. Just hold tight, buddy. Hold tight. Promise you we're going to get to it with the Indiana Pacers. Jason Hammer, the Hammer Nigel Show, is going to be joining us also here at the top of the hour. So, Josh, IndyCar, Long Beach last week. I tell you what, good race, and actually a very, very good race. And I was excited to watch that race. And I like all kinds of IndyCar races. And, you know, there are those that like the oval and those that like the street races and then the road courses, which we'll see here at the Indianapolis Grand Prix. But I just really enjoyed watching this race. I'll tell you what, real quickly, Josh, we're going to do a recap of the radio broadcast, some highlights I pulled off of there, put together, meshed together, courtesy of the guys over at IndyCar and MRN Radio Network. And we'll talk about it right after this, Josh.
And we're underway. The red lights are out. The field is under green. Ryan Hunter Ray pulls away first. The rest of the field comes through. One car stopped well in the back of the field. The safety team is right there to help him. Not sure why that car. Down to the first turn they go, and Jake Query.
Sebastian Bourdais took a look to the outside of Ryan Hunter-Reay, but Ryan Hunter-Reay shut the door. Ryan Hunter-Reay already leads this field. Everybody safely through turn number one in Long Beach. Joseph Newgarden left pit lane just moments ago. Is he able to stay in front of Will Power?
Let's watch them as they come out right now. As a matter of fact, entering the circuit right now goes Tony Kanaan. We await now to find out whether or not, as you had mentioned, Power...
Newgarden is in the lead as Ryan Hunter-Reay is trying. Please spun him out. He spun him out. We've got a crash.
Newgarden took the lead over. We've got a serious issue now that has Ryan Hunter-Reay involved. And it was... And we have seven cars... Now we have cars just slamming into one another, all in the same section. Apparently, they did not see the flags coming out.
So Joseph Newgarden was going very slow because he was on cold tires straight out of the pit. The other guys were on warm tires. This is important. Ryan Hunter-Reay had a lot more speed, had a lot more grip. He went for the inside of the place that's difficult to pass. Joseph Newgarden didn't see he was coming, had no idea he was coming. It's not a place you normally try and pass. Then, after Ryan Hunter-Reay tried to pull away from the back of Joseph Newgarden where he had hit him into the wall, he collected the car of Elio Castroneves as well and got him involved in the incident too. The guys coming around turn four were completely blind to this incident other than the yellow flag, and that's how we had a couple more cars get involved after the incident.
And we've got a crash already. Wilson gets slammed. He gets slammed sideways, and it was Scott Dixon that seemed to move to the left suddenly and right into the side of Justin Wilson. Here's the green flag, and we are back to racing.
Scott Dixon has behind him Mike Conway, then Will Power. Scott Dixon's got Mike Conway, I mean, right on his heels. That nose of the number 20 machine is right underneath the rear wing of that target number 9 of Scott Dixon.
And in the pits, we're beginning to wonder because we see refuelers in the target Chip Ganassi pit standing over the wall. Maybe Conway is lying in wait. There goes Dixon to pit road. Scott Dixon goes to pit road. Mike Conway takes the lead on the streets of Long Beach. The checkered flag, twin checkers. Mike Conway has scored the win here, and what has proven to be an amazing day. He is followed to the finish line by Power. Munoz, Montoya is fourth. Pagno is fifth.
All right, and there you have it. Some highlights out there from Long Beach, the Toyota Grand Prix. Great race that was, Josh. Did you have an opportunity to watch that race, watch the clips? Obviously, one of the biggest wrecks that we talked about, certainly talked about on IndianMay.com, was that big race, that big wreck between Joseph Newgarden and Ryan Hunter-Reay. One would say, hey, you know, that's just racing. Others would say Joseph Newgarden definitely blocked Ryan Hunter-Reay. Did you happen to get a chance to watch that race, Josh? And if so, what are your thoughts?
I did watch that race, and it was a great race. But anybody who would blame that race, that wreck on Joseph Newgarden is completely out of line. Ryan Hunter-Reay acted like a rookie, acted like a moron, acted like an idiot, which are all words I would use to describe Ryan Hunter-Reay to his face, except that as a member of the media, we're not allowed to do that. So that wreck was totally Ryan Hunter-Reay's fault, and I cannot for the life of me. Now, hopefully we can get a chance to interview somebody with Andretti Green later in the year. Well, I guess it's Andretti Autosport now. Why Ryan Hunter-Reay has a ride, because he's an absolutely horrible race car driver.
Well, you know what, as always, and certainly that's what makes this show great, the difference of opinions, and I always seem to have the opposite opinion of you. There's a couple things there that point out for me. I like Joseph Newgarden, a great guy, and we're working on actually having him on the show here in the very near future. Certainly in the month of May, I think we're going to be able to secure him on this show here. So we'll be able to talk with him in depth, and I've talked with Joseph of Newgarden a couple times last year and last season here in Indianapolis. Certainly part of Sarah Fisher Racing, great team owner, so great driver. But at the same time, what I look at and what I see in that situation with Ryan Hunter-Reay, I couldn't disagree with you more. It's probably one of the most talented drivers on the circuit. You look at the number of poles, the number of wins he's got, and the team that he races for. You cannot say that Ryan Hunter-Reay is a bad race car driver. Far, far, far from a bad race car driver. Now, what we look at is what happened Sunday out in Long Beach out there in California along the coast in the streets. There's a difference between road racing, street racing, and oval racing. And, you know, that difference can be just a few inches of the ability to pass. It's hard to pass in a course like Long Beach anyway, as it is. But Ryan Hunter-Reay had a good car and a half jump on Joseph Newgarden. There was plenty of room there. Unfortunately, it's a very competitive race. Joseph Newgarden has a lot to prove as well. Ryan Hunter-Reay was the pole setter. So certainly one could see both sides of the story here. But what I am going to do is I'm going to take the other side of the coin. I'm not going to say that this was a purpose, deliberate, malicious act by Joseph Newgarden to block and wreck Ryan Hunter-Reay. As we know, that created a domino effect of wrecks that really put the race to a halt. And you know, a lot of drivers that were right there in the race. Of course, my buddy James Hinchcliffe, was involved in that wreck, hurt his wrist, and so forth. And as we talked about a little bit on the IndianMay.com. So, I think the situation was clearly that Ryan Hunter-Reay was trying to make a pass of Joseph Newgarden. Joseph Newgarden did not want that to happen. And certainly, you know, the responsible, mature way to handle this would be exactly as Ryan Hunter-Reay did. He put the blame on his shoulder. But for one moment to say that Ryan Hunter-Reay is not a good race car driver and does not deserve a ride, that is just incorrect. And so I will disagree with you and rebuttal you on that, sir, because, is it racing or is it blocking? That's certainly the thing that we talked about on IndianMay.com. And I guess, Josh, it depends on which driver that you ask. And both drivers are very, very competitive. But in my opinion, in my professional opinion, after looking at this and watching the race, Joseph Newgarden did block pole sitter Ryan Hunter-Reay. And certainly, like I said, he put it on his shoulder, But, you know, basically also quoting Ryan Hunter Ray, he says, we could have given each other a little bit more room, and we could have gotten through there, both of us. There's enough room to make a pass. There is enough room to make a pass. So there you go. I think Ryan Hunter Ray was just trying to make a pass. Joseph Newgarden kept that from happening. Josh?
Well, that could be. As with all incidents and wrecks, there's going to be differences of opinions. I think Joseph Newgarden, a great driver, can't stand Ryan Hunter Ray. But what about Mike Conway? 2 years ago, he walked away from the sport. He didn't have the passion for it. He didn't know if he would ever be back. Ed Carpenter knows he struggles on road courses, so he's going to drive the ovals. Mike Conway's going to drive the road courses, of which there are way, 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 way too many road courses, street course races on the IndyCar schedule. So what about a part-time driver who thought he would never get in an IndyCar again, who thought he had lost the love for the sport, getting the win last Sunday, Tim?
Oh, that was a fantastic win, and certainly on our notes here, absolutely, and hats off to Ed Carpenter and his team. And, you know, Ed, it's good to see Ed Carpenter split that up a little bit into their strengths. And obviously Mike Conway's strengths lie into the street and road courses type races, and Ed Carpenter's really, his will be the oval. And I suspect, and I don't know this to be fact, and I know how they've have the team laid out right now, but I suspect it being at Indianapolis and being the inaugural Grand Prix, I suspect that we'll see Ed Carpenter drive that race up here in Indianapolis in May. And so we'll see how that goes. I'm very, very excited. We're excited here at the Balance Team to be out there at Indianapolis Motor Speedway through the entire month of May. Going to be covering that brand new race, the road course and the street course. Let me tell you a little bit of a difference, though, maybe for some novice listeners, novice car fans. Maybe you hear us throwing different terminologies around the oval, the street course and the road course, and you know the names pretty much explain what it is. But oval is a race track much like Indianapolis Motor Speedway and some other oval track races. Basically, it's an oval. And then you've got your street races, which would be things like St. Petersburg, Long Beach, and so forth. And then you've got your road courses, which would be much like the next race, which is Alabama. And also Mid-Ohio. So those are courses that you can look at it as examples when we talk about street courses and road courses. And really, it's very, very simple. Street courses are in the streets of a normal city. You know, Long Beach and normal traffic would be at any other normal weekend, just, you know, like traffic here in Indianapolis. And so as you can imagine, but how cool would it be to have a street race in downtown Indianapolis? That's not going to happen, obviously. And, you know, another great, exciting thing happening out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this year, and you may have seen some of the news coverage about it on IndyCar.com and IMS.com and so forth, but they've got a brand new experience, if you will, for fans. And I love the fact that Indianapolis Motor Speedway is just always doing something new and better for the fans. And that track is designed for the fans. And I tell you what, if you've never been out to Indianapolis Motor Speedway out there at 16th and Georgetown in Indianapolis, go out there and check it out. But they've got a new thing, Josh, called glamping. And really, it's for those, pansy hater camping people. No, I'm just kidding. You know those people that say roughing it. My idea of roughing it is when room service ends at 6 o'clock. Well, the great thing about glamping is you get to camp out there in the infield, Josh. Big old tents, but at the same time, it comes at a premium price. But it's like staying in a hotel, but only camping, because you'll be staying in a tent, but you've got all the necessities that you may need there, luxury drinks and showers, and everything that you need is all provided for you. A nice comfy bed inside the tent. Now, there is no heat inside the tent, but they call it glamping because basically it's glorified camping. Josh, did you see that?
I did see that. Any chance they can hook the media up with the spot in one of those tents?
You know what? We missed their opportunity, and I've been so busy, and I got they had this overnight sample thing for the media, and that was just this past week where you got to go out there, and it was actually just the other day, because the next day was when they unveiled the vehicles, the 2014 Indy 500 Festival vehicles. And how about that Camaro Z28 convertible, pace car being driven by Dario Franchitti? But, yeah, they had that all set up, and certainly at a much a smaller scale, if you will, than what will be on actual race weekend. And I don't know if it's actual race weekend. It might be – I don't know if it actually is the night of the race, the night before the race. I got to get some clarification on that. Basically, there's going to be about 120-150 tents set up there in the infield. Chances are, if you've not already bought your spot there, that's probably not going to be available unless you know somebody. But hey, it's pretty cool they're doing. It looks like a big tent city. So, Josh, I tell you what, Dario Franchitti driving the pace car, how exciting it is to have him back here at Indianapolis, at the Indianapolis 500, certainly after his unexpected retirement after the big wreck out there in Texas at the end of last year. Certainly a very, very lucky man to pull that off and to get the honor to drive the pace car. What I want to know is when they get the green light, you know, the pace car is supposed to turn off and the race keeps going. Are we going to have a situation with Dario Franchitti staying on the track, Josh?
No, I don't think that'll happen, but it's an absolute shame he had to retire. He looked to be a future four-time winner of the Indy 500. Might even became the first five-time winner of the Indy 500 as he drove for Chip Ganassi Racing. And here lately, Ganassi owns Indianapolis. It used to be Penske. In the last few years, it became Ganassi. So it's a shame that he never got to four. I think he could have got to five, six, or seven even. But we're never going to know.
Well, and you know what? I tell you what, he got his wins here, and I'm excited for him. And certainly, he's not going away from racing at all. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen with the new Dario Franchitti. And speaking of something new and different, of course, we know Tony Kanaan, last year's winner of the Indianapolis 500, finally getting his win. And you know what? Talk about the three musketeers. And certainly there's Dario, Tony Kanaan, and Dan Weldon, which, you know, we lost just suddenly in a tragic death out in Las Vegas. And then Tony Kanaan had not got his win, and just everybody was rooting. Even if you weren't a Tony Kanaan fan, you were rooting for Tony Kanaan to win the Indianapolis 500. So how special is that for Tony Kanaan to step in and drive the target car and basically pick up where Dario Franchitti left off?
It is really cool, and it's really awesome that Tony Kanaan got his win last year. But as far as Dan Weldon goes, I still blame the former president or CEO of IndyCar Series, whatever he happened to be. Thankfully, he's no longer involved in the sport, for the absolute dumbest idea in racing history, $1 million if he could start last and win the race.
Well, you know, and I guess we don't really have time to get into that conversation. I can see two sides to that argument and two sides to that conversation. I certainly, and Josh, we want to be very careful in the choice of our words here. We cannot blame the death of Dan Weldon on the president of IndyCar. And absolutely, that's unacceptable. We cannot do that. It created a competitive environment, so I could see that conversation. But you can't make that stretch and that leap to say the president of IndyCar caused the death of Dan Weldon, Josh. You just can't do that.
Well, I didn't mean to say he caused the death, but he did come up with a really bad idea that led to a really unfortunate event. So, no, I don't think he personally caused the death, but he did come up with a really bad idea on that particular day.
You know, and here's the thing. And we're talking about this now. We're getting off our notes just a little bit, so we're going to digress for just a moment here, just to get into this conversation. And certainly, if you want to get chime in, 917-889-8516. Here's the thing. It wasn't a bad idea at the time. Everybody was like, "Hey man, great race for $1 million! Woohoo!" Everybody was excited about racing for $1 million. Not in a million years did we anticipate what happened with Dan Weldon. Not in a million years. We weren't having that conversation about it being a bad idea then. I wasn't, you wasn't, we weren't on this show. Why are we having it now? Why are we having it a few years later after the fact of one of the greatest IndyCar drivers of all time loses his life tragically. Now we're talking about how it's the fault in a decision of a bad idea. Why did nobody say it was a bad idea then?
Well, hindsight is 20/20, but, you know, IndyCar is the greatest racing series in the world as far as I'm concerned. And getting back on topic, Tom, I know it was a great late race last week at Long Beach. We had the Grand Prix coming up in 2 weekends. I know we're excited to cover the inaugural Grand Prix. And I have a question about that, Tom. Do you think the Grand Prix will hurt Indy 500 attendance, or do you think it'll get people pumped up, they'll like it, and it'll help it? I can't decide if I think it'll help or hurt 500 attendance.
Well, I think it's going to help. I mean, there again, bringing back the reason why, and to touch on to what you said a while ago, there's way too many street courses, way too many road course races. Well, the thing is, the fan base for IndyCar is very diverse, extremely diverse. And so I think one of the great things that this does is it gives you a full race of racing in May at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. You really do get back the month of May, the entire month of May. My name is Mark Wessel, Presidente. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
And souls of champions, all will take notice as a new tradition ignites. The inaugural Grand Prix of Indianapolis. New twists, new turns, new thrills. Grand Prix of Indianapolis at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Our story begins now.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Race fans, get ready for the 2014 Coors Light Carb Day concert at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, starring the Red Rocker, Sammy Hagar, and the Wobble. And Sublime with Rome. Friday, May 23rd, Sammy Hagar and the Wappos. And Sublime with Rome. Get more info at ims.com/carb day.
Your talk show for NASCAR.
Yeah! Now that's what I'm talking about.
The Balance Online.
All right, welcome back to The Balance. My name is Mark Wessel, Presidente. First half hour gone. In the books, in the can. As they like to say, 917-889-8516 is the digits to get to me. Follow us on our social media world. T-Balance. At Pro Indy, at Two Hot Corner, and at, I think I got it all there. Joining us also, my partner in crime, Mr. $2 Bill Josh. Josh, how you doing, sir? Are you ready for Easter?
I am ready for Easter. Unfortunately, I have to work tomorrow, but you're going to Easter dinner after I get off work. What about you, Tom? You and Michelle ready?
Oh, never ready. But, you know, it is what it is. It goes. But it's a good day to relax. NASCAR is taking the day off as well. And, Josh, what are you doing with your phone there, my man?
I was turning my volume up. You're a little quiet this morning, Tom. I didn't know if it was my phone or your microphone, but.
Hey, you know what? One of the things I did, you know, when we cover these races and stuff, and at every race there's a media center, of course, here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. There's a big race as well, and a big media center, I'm sorry. And, you know, it's always, so a lot of people's like, eh, what goes on in the media center? Well, it's top secret. Well, nah, you know, not really. But, you know, it gives us an opportunity to sit back, relax, eat some chow, and get ready for some press conferences. And one of the fun things that happen in these media centers is really you kind of get to see an off-the-cuff side of the driver and so forth, and kind of get to see how they're acting and how they're reacting to different situations. What we call off the record. So, you know, what I come up with is I come up with a collage, if you will, because it is off weekend for NASCAR, so really not a lot to talk about NASCAR. So I thought this would be a great time. Certainly I've got some with IndyCar too, but I thought it would be a great time to put a collage of things that have been recorded at various different media centers and races that the Balance has covered. So Josh, we'll listen to this. Outtakes from the media center. Be right back.
What do y'all want to know?
Well, keep it very simple. Three simple steps.
I grew up in a house full of clocks. So it's been one that's been pretty elusive.
America's favorite comedian. He's also
Denzel Washington. Thank you.
In the outlaw carts I grew up racing, everybody did them. My sister's ex-boyfriend probably did it the best.
Get her done.
So she doesn't really like to see me do them, but...
Bad memories?
Yeah.
Number one is, okay, drivers to your car. Number two is, all right, you knuckleheads, get in them. All right, number three, get them, start your engines!
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Everything's big in Texas, even this mic and this desk.
The last hockey game I was at, I was at a slingshot, and they shot me through bowling pins and with Newman. I went a lot faster than him. Did you get it?
Sorry about the weather. But it'll be a fun race on Tuesday, though, when we get going.
Believe it or not, I knocked all the bowling pins down, and he didn't. Beats anything I've ever seen.
Greg Biffle. He drives that number 16, Red Cross.
Oh, no.
What's the due date?
It's about 3 weeks.
You got a backup plan for that in case things, you know, go awry? Or?
Not really. I just told her to have it on a Monday.
Do you feel more fan love here than you do at other places? Is there a real sense that you guys are the hometown guys that you're for?
No. This is the first time I've been in the media center for a while, so that's another perk of winning. I get to talk to you guys.
I'm glad you made it here.
You stop by the hall, there's a couple sandwiches left. They got some grease and stuff on them for the mechanics, but they're there if you guys want them.
I don't know if you can tell or not, but I'm a frequent heartburn sufferer. So I know that's odd.
I tried to talk to them, let me drive a duck commander car, but they won't do it.
Did you talk to Eddie Gossett? We'll make it happen.
I told him, I'll win this thing if you let me drive it.
I don't know how good Kevin was. He was pretty fast. I think he was going to try to get out of it and try to get there.
Oh, it took about, what, 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
About 2 years before this come to fruition.
Elliot and Chase. Yeah. I kind of get myself confused with Chase Elliott and Elliot, sorry.
You got the imagination of a stick of butter.
I got people following on Twitter, too. You know, they send me tweets while I'm on here. Yeah, the people that are watching on NASCAR.com. Thank you.
All right, some media center outtakes, and I also want to appreciate the courtesy of NASCAR.com also for helping us out with some of those outtakes as well. Good time listening to what goes on in the media center with NASCAR and so forth. So $2 bill, Josh. We get into so first of all, what were your thoughts on the outtakes?
Well, I'm hoping since this is my fifth year covering the Indy 500 with you, Tom, that maybe this year I'm actually going to be considered deemed worthy for you to take me on the tour of the media center, as that has not yet happened. But I thought that was a hilarious sound clip.
I'll tell you what, it's top secret, man. We take you in the media center, we got to kill you. Okay, so we'll take you into the media center. Well, let's get into some NASCAR talk. We've got about 20 minutes, 917-889-8586. If you want to talk some NASCAR, we could do that. Or if you want to talk some IndyCar or racing, because coming up at 10 o'clock, I'm going to unleash the beast, if you will. The Pacers, the Hawks, tonight, the playoffs. Jason Hammer is going to be joining us at the Hammer Niger Show, going to be helping us break that down, if you will. Well, I tell you what, you know, real quickly on some news around NASCAR, Swan Racing really has disbanded, which I guess they're not in existence anymore. They went out of business, we'll say it like that, because they couldn't get the sponsorships. And I guess that kind of goes to something that we've said before. You know, we got to pay to play in this game, and it's a big boys game with big boy money. And if you don't have the big boy money, you just can't compete. And that's what happened with and it's happened in many times with these owner operator drivers, certainly the Swan Racing debuted in 2012 as a single car operation with owner Brandon Davis and driver David Strime. And so certainly they're all looking for other jobs right now. So basically Brandon Davis is the CEO of Swan Energy, an independent oil and gas company that's based out in Denver. They just couldn't make it happen. So, you know, I've wished the best of luck to them and their drivers and so forth there. But really, Josh, any thoughts on that? Certainly, I'm looking at a tweet here from Anthony Marlowe. Said, my mission is to ensure that Cole Whip Racing is in every hashtag NASCAR Sprint Cup season event this season. So, certainly, they want to get back out on the track in one way or another. And they say they've got a 2014 Cup lineup, but I don't see it happening. Josh.
Well, that's a sad story, but also as far as race teams announcing they were closing this week, and we didn't get to this in the last segment. Panther Racing, who was one of the founding teams in the IndyCar series when they split and became IRL 15, 16, 17 years ago now. Announced this week, Tom, that they're closing up shop and they will not be at the Indy 500 or any races going forward. In fact, they only kept one chassis and one full-time employee. So also a sad day in IndyCar to see Panther Racing, who, you know, Dan Weldon won the Indy 500 for J.R. Hildebrand, finished second for. They finished second in the Indy 500 for straight years. Is no more. So it's a sad week for race teams.
It is, but, you know, that's racing, I guess. That's racing, it is. And, you know, and also, I wanted to just kind of talk a little bit. Here it is, Easter weekend, and NASCAR's off. So, yeah, let's talk a little bit about the television analysis and crew, if you will. The in-front camera people, if you will, that handle NASCAR. Do they handle the rain delays in a good way? I don't know. You know, I think oftentimes when we have extended rain delays with NASCAR, the network goes to a race that's already happened. Typically that race from last year, whatever race that was. What happens is it creates mass confusion for people who just follow racing on the social media. What? You know, who won this race, who won that race? And so when you have conflicting results, so maybe that could be done a little bit better. So let's talk a little bit about the top 10 TV broadcasters, if you will, or over short period of time, or TV, it doesn't necessarily have to be in the present, but let's talk a little bit about the top announcers for NASCAR. Let's talk a little bit about, and then we'll start our list here, and we'll just kind of go through there. Certainly, Josh, feel free to add whatever you want. 15 minutes, though, we're going to be unleashing the beast for the talk on the NBA playoffs and the Pacers. So I'll tell you what, if you're not a race car fan, but you are an NBA fan, well, you just need to stick around because it's going to be coming. 917-889-8516 if you want to talk some NASCAR. So really just kind of wanted to, you know, take an opportunity because NASCAR is off this weekend, so just kind of wanted to have an opportunity to have some other conversations. And really, I don't know, you know, I'm just going to give kind of my top 10 there, Josh. If you want to add to it, feel free. So really, and we'll start with the number 10 list and go backwards to number 1. You know, David Hobbs, you know, I don't know how many people know who he is, but there was just, you know, a lot of people like that British accent. But it seems somewhat out of place. He was a former driver who raced in just about everything, made 6 Formula One starts, 2 in NASCAR, which is now the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, and then I believe it was Winston Cup. Hobbs worked as a color commentator and pit reporter for CBS for many years of NASCAR. Really, to give you an idea who he is, he's the guy who sat in the motorhome with Teresa Earnhardt when her husband Dale lost a tire, and ultimately the Daytona 500 in the Derek Coupe 1990. Later, it was Hobbs that was asked the Intimidator, of course Dale Earnhardt Sr., the question everyone was thinking, what the hell happened? So certainly that's one of the top TV analysis. Josh, you got anybody you want to add to the list there? And is your number 10?
Well, I would go with Darrell Waltrip as my number 10. I'm sure you have him a lot higher on your list. And he's a great announcer, but I cannot stand boogity, 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 let's go racing, boys. Or the fact that during the telecast, he's always about himself.
I think that's what's made him who he is. But you're right; it is about that, how he breaks into the radio communications. Hi, DW here. Can I get a copy? This is DW. Well, yeah, you know, because of the fact of that, he's the top in the list. So I put him up a little bit higher. Dale Jarrett was my number 9. You know, I like Dale Jarrett. I'm talking about Dale Jarrett senior and junior, for that matter. You know, really, they were smooth. And certainly Jarrett moved effortlessly into the broadcast booth after his racing days. And recent years has been obviously a regular on ESPN, but Dale Jarrett.
Dale Jarrett's a great announcer. He's a great race car driver, too. I really like hearing him cover the nationwide race on ESPN. I'd like to see him get a bit more coverage on Sprint Cup Series. Maybe next year when they move to NBC, he'll be the lead announcer for NBC.
Yeah, and I think that's been the rumor there. Buddy Baker. A lot of people, especially NASCAR fans, know who Buddy Baker is. He's the Nashville Network. The Nashville Network was NASCAR's broadcast partner through the 1990s, and Baker was TNN's voice for a long time. A 19-time winner of Sports Premier Circuit Driver. So certainly he was a great one. Now my next one on the list here, and maybe I should have him as number 1, but certainly in the top 10, Chris Economaki. And certainly we've named the media center there at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Chris Economaki Media Center. So certainly a great legend. And I don't know that he was technically an analyst, so maybe we can't call him that. He was really more of a pit reporter than anything. What a great memorial they've got set for him up at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. They had his typewriter set up. His spot where he's set at Indianapolis Motor Speedway has been reserved and memorialized. And his typewriter, back in the days, yes, when they used typewriters in the media center, Josh.
Well, unfortunately, I don't know who he is, but I'm going to have to do a little bit of research about him. I did know the media center was named after him, but I had no idea who he was. I actually thought he was one of the founding fathers of the track, but sounds like a great guy. I'll have to do some more research on him. Maybe we can do a segment on him during the month of May.
That sounds good. Boy, am I dating myself now. Who, my goodness. Now, surely you know who Benny Parson is. I think everybody knows who Benny Parson was, and certainly he died back in 2007 to cancer, but he was also a great TV analysis for NASCAR, Josh.
Yes, back in 2007, I was a yellow shirt out at the track. I know the yellow shirts that the media people can't stand, and I was working in the media a lot one day, and this big, heavyset guy came up on a golf cart, and I had no clue who it was, and he said, "It looks like the sun's in your eyes," and he had handed me a pair of Oakleys, which I still have to this day, and it later turned out to be a Benny Parsons. So unfortunately, I didn't know who it was. I just knew it was a guy who handed me a pair of sunglasses to keep the sun out of my eyes, but he was a great guy.
Let's go ahead and get on. I'm going to go ahead and get into my top three here because we've only got just a few minutes left here, and we want to make sure we have plenty of time to get into the NBA conversation, Josh, which I know you're just nipping at the bit to do. Kyle Petty. I like Kyle Petty. A lot of people don't like me, either like him or don't like him, but Kyle Petty. What are your thoughts on him? How does he handle himself in front of the camera and being an analysis for NASCAR?
He handles himself very well, and he overcame a lot of tragedies. I believe this year marks the 10th year since his son, Adam Petty, got killed in New Hampshire. So you consider he's the son of the king, Richard Petty, and his son passed away. He's a lifelong diehard fan of NASCAR and used to be a decent driver.
Right, absolutely. All right, let's go here with number two. See, I had Darrell Waltrip as number two. Old DW. I think a lot of people do, you know, how could you not say boogity, 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 boogity? How could you not say you don't like that? That has become the slogan, if you will, for fans everywhere when it's time to go racing. Boogity, 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 let's go racing. How could you not like that?
I don't completely hate boogity, 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 but I hate how during every single race, Darrell Waltrip has to talk about what a great driver he was, what he did on this day, what he did at this track. Dude, you're retired. Get over it.
All right, my number one guy, Ned Jarrett. You may not know who Ned Jarrett is. Probably a lot of younger viewers or fans are familiar with Ned Jarrett. And certainly his work on television. I think 2007 may have been the last time he called a race. He really invented the idea of a former driver moving into the booth, if you will. He was a former driver, obviously, and really mastered the craft of getting out of the race car and into the booth. I think he was one of the first ones to do that. And here's the other thing. Remember back in 1993, of course you may not remember this, but he actually had Paul on the air with Dale Jarrett, his son's 1993 Daytona victory. And to really listen to that was just amazing. And then, of course, he was inducted into the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and certainly his broadcast work has been known for years. Probably a lot of people know Ned Jarrett more as a broadcaster than as a race car driver. But can you imagine having the call on the air when your father makes the call?
I don't remember seeing that live, but I've seen it a couple of times on what used to be CTV, now it's Fox Sports 1, and I saw his Hall of Fame induction speech. Quite a great speech. So, no, I don't know Ned Jarrett as a broadcaster or a race car driver. I just know him as one of the godfathers of the sport and a really funny guy whenever you get the chance to listen to him.
Well, I'm one of the godfathers of this show right here. That's why they call me El Presidente. And, we're trying to get that soundbite loaded. I'll try to get that on for us here before we end our segment here. And when the call was really basically just to give you the setup, if you will, and hopefully we could get it on for you here. I know we have people looking for it at the moment here, looking for it, and hopefully we can get that on for you. But really, can you imagine this, being father and being the caller analyst or the analyst doing the, we'll call it play-by-play call, and your son wins the Daytona 500?
That had to be a surreal feeling, Tom. We'll probably never get to experience anything quite like it, but I imagine it was one of the best feelings of his entire life. And I imagine, I don't know what station he was working for that time, gave him a little bit of a pass on cheering. Because, you know, as a member of the media, we're not supposed to cheer for the home team or any other team. But I imagine they gave him a free pass that day.
You know, I think, and I'll have to double check on that, but I think it was CBS. It may have been ESPN, but it may have been ESPN, because at that point, I don't know that CBS was actually carrying it full-time. I'll have to double check on that. It was either, well, it had to have been either CBS or ESPN. Maybe you guys, maybe some of our listeners know, 917-889-8516. And, yeah, what an, and so I thought, well, that'd be a good opportunity today, would just to be to talk about, you know, some of the great drivers and great, great caller analysis and analysis. There we go. I'll get it out, sir. And I know we're trying to get. Actually, we do have that right now, Josh. We're going to go ahead and go to that sound box. This is Ned Jarrett. Dale Jarrett's 1993 Daytona victory. We're going to take a break right after that. We're going to go to this soundbite. Then we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to get into that NBA talk right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Jarrett dipping to the outside as Gordon went to the inside. He's going to clear and getting done in the corner.
Into one, Jarrett on the move.
Mitch. Come on, Martha. He's going to be okay, dear.
Mitch, he's quit looking now.
Yeah.
Down for the finish. A couple to go. Again, Earnhardt looking unstable coming up the corner. You can see the tail switch, and he just gathers it up like the master he is.
Jarrett wants to push him hard into this turn. He wants to push him hard in there. If his car is getting loose, he wants to loosen it up even more.
The closer he can get the bumper to the back of Dale Earnhardt's car, the looser Dale will get. There he comes. Earnhardt, it looks like he's driving up under him. Earnhardt's car got loose and slid up the racetrack.
Dale Jarrett seeking in. They touch. They come back to the line. White flag. White flag and one lap to go. Earnhardt coming back on the outside. Bodine gets into it. Strickland gets into it. This is the finish.
Did we say five cars had a shot at it? Get ready, because it's coming to the wire. There's Jarrett in front.
Jarrett pulling back in front. Bodine comes down to the inside. Jeff Bodine, the 86 champion, trying to find some room.
Come on, Dale. Go, baby, go. All right, come on. I know he's got to the floorboard. He can't do any more. Come on, take him to the inside. Don't let him get on the inside of you coming around this turn. Here he comes, Earnhardt. It's the Dale and Dale show. We've come off of turn four. You know who I'm pulling for. It's Dale Jarrett. Bring her to the inside, Dale. Don't let him get down there.
He's going to
make it. Dale Jarrett's going to win the Daytona 500. All right. Oh, look at Martha. Oh, dear. Oh, can you believe it? Way to go.
Oh, hey. Man.
Can you teach him to drive that race car? You think she'll get out of the van, or are you going to go get her out, Ned?
Oh, that poor girl, she needs help.
Happy Valentine's Day, Mrs. Jarrett.
How many people get to participate in two Super Bowls? There he goes. He's won the Super Bowl with stock car racing. Joe Gibbs.
Man. 36-year-old Dale Jarrett.
And Martha was not at his first win. When he won in Michigan in 1991, she wasn't there.
Winning his second Winston Cup race. Winning the biggest race of the year. Winning the Great American Race. Dale Jarrett from Hickory, North Carolina, headed for Victory Lane, where you will meet him in a moment.
Joe Gibbs walking to Victory Lane at Daytona. He's used to hearing hail to the Redskins. Hail to 18 would be appropriate here.
Chris Economaki standing by with the Daytona champion, Dale Jarrett.
Okay, here he is getting his right hat on. Come on out, Dale. Here he is. The surprise winner with a fabulous straight, and look at the celebration. Congratulations, Dale. About that last lap, how long did you plot that?
Well, I was just trying to find out where I could really get a run on those guys, and it seemed like 3 and 4 was a good place for me to really get a run. I found out that I could get around Jeff on the outside there and did that, and Dale just slid up high down there. It looked like his car got a little bit loose getting in the corner, and that let me get on the bottom. I had a run.
We got a headset here for you to talk to your dad. There you go. Take it away, Ned.
Super job there, Dale. I tell you, I'm really proud of you. You did just exactly what you had to do, like I told you, right?
That's right, exactly like you told me all along, Dad. Thanks for everything. I appreciate it. This was a great day.
Well, I tell you, your mama was watching, and you can't believe the way she broke down when this race was over. Of course, we had to expect that. Proud of you, son.
You came so close back, I believe it was in 63 when you ran out of fuel. I thought we'd get this one for the whole family.
All right, you did great for us.
Thank you.
Dad, you know, your mother was praying for the last 15 laps. It was the longest prayer I ever heard anybody say. Did you have any frights during the day?
I was close to a couple of things, but most times stayed out of trouble. Everything seemed to happen behind me most of the day, and I think everybody did a good job out there. I had such a good car, I could just kind of bide my time. Jimmy Maycar did a great job, and we just want to thank the Lord for a safe race. I know Rusty's okay now, and he's the one that brought this home for us.
Well, congratulations again on a great victory, Dale Kerr.
Thanks a lot.
And we'll be back with more of the Daytona 500 after these messages.
County Road 233, under my feet. Nothing on this wide rock but a little old me.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Soccer is the world's game.
And it has deep roots in Indiana.
It lives in our backyard.
In our rec league.
In nuestras escuelas.
Indy 11 is here.
And make no mistake, this is Indiana's team.
It was built from the ground up.
Brick by brick by soccer fans. When we take the field next April, we'll be playing for you.
For me. Para mí.
For us.
This is my team.
Este es mi equipo.
This is our team.
This is your team.
It's time.
It's going to be awesome.
I'm going to be there.
Voy a estar ahí. I'll be there.
This isn't just any soccer team. This is Indiana's team, and that includes you.
The echoes. The legends. The hearts and souls of champions. All will take notice as a new tradition ignites. The inaugural Grand Prix of Indianapolis. New twists. New turns. New thrills. Grand Prix of Indianapolis at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Our story begins now.
Race fans, get ready for the 2014 Coors Light Carb Day Concert at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, starring the Red Rocker, Sammy Hagar, and the Wobbo. And Sublime with Rome. Friday, May 23rd, Sammy Hagar and the Wobbo. And Sublime with Rome. Get more info at ims.com/carb day.
Here's another romantic song by someone with a better love life than yours.
Frank Bogle, head coach of the Indiana Pacers, and you're listening to The Balance.
And yes, you are, my Stock with Yale Presidente. Welcome back to the Balance second hour. I tell you what, it is time. We've been teasing it all morning long. And it is time to unleash the beast. And I have two of the biggest beasts when it comes to what we call Pacer Talk and NBA playoffs. And I tell you what, they've been in the belly of the beast. So we're going to talk in great detail here over the next few minutes about the Indiana Pacers and tonight's big playoff game and, of course, the NBA playoffs in general. Joining me now, one of our favorite guests, the man with the plan, and never, never eat after him, the man, Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show. How you doing, Jason?
You called me a beast and you mentioned belly. I'm not sure, but are you calling me fat, Tom?
I'm not calling you fat. By no stretch of the imagination am I calling you fat. I'm just saying that you have no fury of him, that's for sure. And also, $2 Bill Josh is joining us as well. All right, guys, let's get into this conversation. I know that Josh has been nipping at the bud. We're going to start with you, Josh, and real quickly, go ahead and tell the Pacer Nation why they should hate you today.
All right, and I know Hammer's going to disagree with me. Pacer Nation, be quiet. You do not have a rivalry with the Miami Heat. You cannot claim you have a rivalry with the Miami Heat until you send them home in the playoffs. According to the Webster Dictionary, in order to be a rivalry, you must first take something from Miami. You have taken nothing from Miami. You can claim you took the number one seed from Miami when, in fact, they gift-wrapped it, put a pretty little bow on it, said we don't want it, you can have it, because they know by giving you the number one seed, you're more than likely not going to get past Chicago, thanks to the big donut you have in the middle named Rory Hibbert, who's absolutely doing nothing. So Indianapolis, stop talking about being rivals with the Miami Heat. You're just not. You come off sounding like a bunch of crybabies who went up to the bully, punched him in the face, got beat up, run over to the principal's office, and start crying about it. You're not the rivals. You come off sounding like a bunch of crybabies, and I guarantee Hammer disagrees with me.
Well, and Jason Hammer of the Jason of Hammer and Nigel Show, maybe he agrees, maybe he doesn't disagree, but you know what? It was the bully, Josh, that used to punch you in the face. Go ahead, Jason.
You know, ultimately, I mean, if we're going to get into semantics, he's right. It's not a rivalry until somebody wins. But, I mean, if we're going by Greg Brady, Brady Bunch exact words, then he's right on the money. God bless you. God bless America. You're right on. But much like the way the Supreme Court views cases against pornography, the ruling states, I know it when I see it. And that's kind of the way rivalries are in sports. I mean, let's be honest. The Packers and Bears, they have the greatest rivalry in sports, one of them, along with Ohio State and Michigan, Yankees and Red Sox. Pacers, and he's nowhere near that. But when you watch these games, there's a lot on the line. The teams don't care for each other. To me, it's a rivalry. You know, I don't care what the textbook definition says. Yes, the Heat have accomplished more. But when you watch these games, you can't just tell me that they don't mean anything. You can't tell me that a Pacers and Heat game is the equivalent of watching Miami against Milwaukee or Indiana against Charlotte. It's not. Technically, you know, for all semantic purposes, right on. The Heat have accomplished a heck of a lot more. They have what the Pacers want. But you can't tell me that this isn't one of the most anticipated series and games when they play every year in the NBA. And if that's not a rivalry, then I don't really know what it is.
Well, first of all, they've got to get past the Hawks. And I think a lot of people, Jason and Josh, think that they can do that. I've heard a lot of people all week say that it's going to be five games or six games. But, you know, as I heard Dan Docky talk to yesterday, and certainly I want to give our condolences and thoughts and prayers to him as he deals with the passing of his father. But certainly, as he mentioned, game one was a crucial game for them to win, and they have to be able to get past the Hawks to even get to the Heat. So let's talk about the Hawks and the Pacers. What do the Pacers have to do to beat the Hawks?
Well, ultimately, this reeks to me of that Pacers-Orlando series 2 years ago, where the Pacers finally got over the hump. There was so much optimism heading into the postseason, and then Orlando comes into Bankers Life Fieldhouse, steals game one, and all the mojo goes out the window. Now, ultimately, the Pacers responded and won, you know, the next four games in a row and wrapped it up. I wouldn't be shocked if Atlanta came in tonight and won a game. Kyle Korver adding to his legacy of one of the great Pacer killers of all time. The only time this guy ever plays great is against the Pacers. I wouldn't be shocked if Atlanta got one of these two, but at the end of the day, in the NBA, in seven-game series, the best teams win. It's not March Madness. There's no one and done. And throughout seven games, the cream rises to the top. We had Mark Boyle on our show a couple weeks back, and we were kind of anticipating this matchup in the postseason, and he makes a great point. Even though the Pacers have been garbage coming down the stretch, at the end of the day, you've won about 25 more games than the team you're playing. The team you're playing has lost their best player earlier in the season, and you've got home court advantage. You get 4 out of 7 at home. If you can't do that, then God bless America, you don't deserve to be there. Pacers in 6.
Josh, go ahead, sir. What do the Pacers have to do to beat the Hawks in, and who comes out on top here?
Well, I think it's going to be Pacers in 6, and I want to get your thoughts and also Hammer's thoughts. So Pacers have had an epic, unprecedented even, second half collapse, and it all starts around Rory Hibbert. And I might even argue that if they fail to advance to the NBA Finals, Bird needs to find somewhere to send Rory Hibbert, because I don't – now, you know I'm a big Rockets fan. The Pacers went into Houston about a month ago. Dwight Howard flat-out wore Rory Hibbert out, embarrassed him on national TV, and Hibbert hasn't been close to the same thing. So my question for you, Hammer, is Dwight Howard in the head of Rory Hibbert a little bit? Is that what happened to Hibbert? Did he get embarrassed and he lost his confidence? Or is he proving that he is what people said he is? He's just soft.
You know, it has nothing at all to do with Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard's got zero influence on this whole thing. Anybody that's followed Roy's career cheers into it now with the Pacers know this happens every year. He is the most bizarre head case in the league. When his confidence goes down, for whatever reason, we go through long stretches of bad play. And people can go back to the beginning of last year, coming off a max deal. He came out of the gate and was horrible. Then something happened. He had a great game. He got his confidence up. And you saw Roy Hibbert in the postseason last year. You saw that Roy Hibbert early in the season this year. He's just a streaky guy. There are some guys that are mentally tough enough to handle the rigors of an 82-game schedule. Say what you want about him, but Kobe Bryant, that dude is a killer 82 games a year when he's healthy. That's not Roy Hibbert. Roy Hibbert is a guy that he's up, he's down, he plays well, but when his head's not right, he's a disservice on both ends of the floor. So perhaps the playoffs is what he needs to hit the proverbial switch, so to speak. You know, you talked about the Dwight Howard situation. When he's motivated, when Roy's motivated, you know, things tend to change. That game in Indiana against Miami almost a month ago, everyone was talking about how, you know, Greg Oden's going to come in and be the matchup against Roy Hibbert. Humiliated Greg Oden, and that experiment was done within one night. When he's motivated, he's one of the best guys to have on the floor in the NBA. But when his head's not right, you know, bring in the psychiatrist, because your guess is as good as mine.
Well, we were talking about rivalries, and you guys talk, and want to think about this. You know, really, a head-to-head matchup night between two Indianapolis natives, George Hill and Jeff Teague. The two have been playing against each other for years, and now they'll be able to showcase the rivalry. Jason, when you look at these two players going head-to-head, they may shake hands and have a beer later, but, hey, I tell you what, these childhood friends are going to go at it and do battle tonight in the playoffs.
George Hill has his work cut out for him. He has not played well down the stretch. There's a lot of Pacer fans, media, myself included, that think maybe some of these fourth-quarter minutes need to go to C.J. Watson. It's a tough matchup for George Hill. George Hill struggles against fast, speedy point guards. Not necessarily the kind that likes to set up the offense or can shoot or can back you down, but the speedy guys is what gives George Hill problems, and that's kind of what he's going against this series. If you look at the two biggest advantages for Atlanta right now, it's at the point guard position and, dare I say, at center right now. Atlanta's always provided, you know, Roy Hibbert issues because their bigs could come out. They can draw them away from the basket because they play that European style where you have seven-footers that can take and make three-pointers. So those are where Atlanta is going to have to really hang their hat at in this series. I don't think they can do that for seven games, but, again, wouldn't be shocked if they stole one of the first two, but a lot of pressure on George Hill and Roy Hibbert. Those right now, I think, would be the two weak points of your Pacers starting lineup heading into the postseason.
Josh, go ahead. You look at George Hill. Does he have his work cut out for him tonight?
I believe he does have his work cut out for him. I also believe this is George Hill's in his final games as an Indiana Pacer. If Larry Bird could have came up with Kyle Lowry, we all know, despite what Larry Bird said, he tried desperately to come up with Kyle Lowry at the trading deadline. So, Hammer, my suggestion would be, and I don't know if Vogel will do this, either start C.J. Watson and use George Hill off the bench, which, yes, I know George Hill's going to take as a sign of disrespect, or put Mr. Triple Double, Lance Stephenson, who's a lot bigger and a lot more physical over on Jeff Teague. Do you think Stephenson could handle Jeff Teague?
I think he could. I think ultimately there's a chance you may see Paul George slide over and guard him just with an athletic lineup that they have on the floor. There's a chance PG, who guarded a lot of point guards coming down the stretch, might handle George Teague. Again, when you look at Atlanta's lineup, that's the only guy that you're concerned about getting penetration, getting to the basket, and creating offense on his own. So why not put one of the league's premier defenders, which Paul George is in terms of on-the-ball defense, slide him over, let him pick up a few minutes on Teague, and see where it goes from there. I don't think there's any chance of Hill having a seat. I don't think Larry Bird's going to make that happen, and certainly not Frank Vogel. Frank, as we know, one of the most loyal guys in the NBA. He's going to ride what got him there. George Hill's going to start. C.J. Watson's going to come in off the bench. Now, fourth quarter minutes, don't be shocked if you see Paul George picking up some defensive assignments against Teague in this series.
Well, we're joined by Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show, and also promotions director. His day job that requires him to be mature and responsible is with 93.1 WIBC, the news, the serious journalist radio, I guess, if you will. But
yeah,
the Hammer
and Nigel,
they kind of frown on that, huh? You know,
I can only
imagine. You walking around WIBC with a man, I have a brain fart now, and I should know this too. Who's your midday guy there? The very conservative guy.
Oh, that would be Mr. Greg Garrison, the man that took Mike Tyson up the river for raping shit.
That's right. That's absolutely right. I can only imagine what he would be like if you were running around there without any pants, let alone everybody else. Well, and I
know what? Greg Garrison, real quick, Greg Garrison is a hell of a guy. He came on the Hammer and Nigel Show a couple of weeks ago, had a few beers with us, told us some great stories, some Mike Tyson stuff. Check that out at hammerandnigel.com. You'll have an all-new respect for G-Squared.
Oh, absolutely, and I got HammerandNigel.com on it. I don't get a chance to come out and to Coach's Tavern as much as I'd like to watch your show, but you guys have an excellent thing going. I think you guys are pioneers in a lot of ways, and you started something a few years back that, you know, your partner in crime, Nigel, and you guys had your show for a while. You had it on X103 here at local in Indianapolis, but basically you took your show and said, okay, this show is completely off the record because at this point we could do whatever we want, say whatever we want. So really you have the best guests just being themselves, drinking beer and hanging out with them, you know, for a mature audience, obviously, but you guys have a lot of fun with it. Talk with us a little bit about the Hammer and Nigel Show, what it's about, and what you guys cover there.
Sure. It's the long story, the cliff notes of it here is that we get together every Thursday in Coach's Tavern. We chat with a local celebrity, politician, athlete, musician, some sort of local who's who person. And we have some beers, we have some food, and it's an hour chat. There's no commercials, there's no songs, and the hour flies by pretty quick. And the guests have been phenomenal. You know, between Nige and myself, we've been able to network pretty good during our radio time here in Indianapolis. And, you know, everybody from Colts Pro Bowl players to Frank Vogel to Bobby Slick Leonard and everybody in between has been on the Hammer and Nigel Show. You know, Debbie Knox came out a couple of weeks ago and was telling us great stories about covering a murder in a portal. I mean, this is a fun show that I think the reputation is a little than the actual show it is. I think most people just hear Hammer and Nigel and they think, oh, it's unedited. These guys are they're running around dropping the F-bomb. And I'm not saying it doesn't sneak out from time to time, but it's just an unfiltered, fun chat, and it gives you a side of some of these local folks that we see in Indianapolis that you might not see in the daily basis.
Well, absolutely. Hammer and Nigel Show, and check him out on at Coach's Tavern. A lot of fun. Or check him out, hammerandnigelshow.com. And you don't know this, Jason, but you do know this. I am the who's of who's. Because mention my name and everybody's going to go, who? Who? So I want to tell you, I am a who of who's. So, you know, I'm open for booking. I'm kind of booked up for a while right now. I'm just kidding. But, yeah, I love listening to your show. Have a great time with it. Check it out, Jason and Hammer. Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show at hammerandnigel.com. And, you know, real quick, I'm only going to digress here for just a second because I'm going to give you some to push your real job, 93.1 WIBC, which is the news outlet, which is the news outlet station here in Indianapolis. I know we're a national show, but basically it's the local news and radio feel, if you will. And one of the things that you have been spearheading as well with WIBC is the crazy crime that's been going on here in Indianapolis.
Oh,
and certainly,
yeah.
Certainly here recently we've seen a murder-suicide with two police officers. Talk with us a little bit about what WIBC is doing to help with that, if anything.
Right. The main thing we can do right now is provide the proper information of who's doing this and what you can do to keep yourself and your family safe. Last month, we held a big free town hall event. We held it at Fountain Square, free to attend, anybody that wanted to come. We packed the place out. I think we had 500 folks there, three TV stations. We had a newspaper covering it. Greg Garrison was the host. He went on his, you know, experiences of what he's seen with crime, speak to the crowd. We had Troy Riggs at a Department of Safety Direct Guy Welford, who was a gun expert, and we had an expert on home safety from ADT as part of our panel, and they basically laid it all out. Here's what you need to do to provide for your family. Here's what your rights are if somebody invades your home. If you're a gun owner, this is what you can legally do. This is what you can't. And if you live next to somebody that's doing shady activities, you know, this is how you protect yourself. It was a great event. You can go to our website at WIBC.com and watch the whole thing. It was very quick, very thorough, very prompt. It was about an hour and 10 minutes, monologues, videos, the whole thing is laid out for you. And as a news outlet and as a talk station, I think it's important to mention, too, that we don't need to be as scared as a lot of news outlets want you to be. The majority of this crime is crime on crime. It's, you know, people with previous mugshots shooting and killing people with previous mugshots. Now, I'm not saying, you know, that makes murder any better, but it's not very rarely is it the case where, you know, the Capozzano gentleman was out for a jog and got shot and murdered. That, you know, right. was terrible, disgusting.
Sure.
That's got to stop. But that's the exception more than the rule of what's happening in Indianapolis right now.
Well, absolutely, and I appreciate you getting into that with us, Jason. We've only got just a few minutes left, guys, because we've got to get going because the Pacers aren't the only team in Indianapolis that are in the playoffs. Obviously, the Indiana Ice are in the playoffs, and assistant coach Adam Krog is going to be joining us here in just a few moments. So, real quickly, $2 bill, Josh, if you could get it in here in like a minute or less, because we want to give Jason Hammer the final word on the Pacers tonight. Go ahead, Josh.
So my question to you, Hammer, and mainly to Larry Bird, but Larry Bird apparently doesn't like talking to local media unless you're Bob Kravitz. Why aren't you buying him? What are we saving him for? This is the playoffs. You signed him for the playoffs, or did you lie and you really signed him so Miami won it? What do you think? Did they sign him to play him, or did we sign him simply so Miami won it, even though the first thing Larry Bird said is that's not why we signed him?
Well, ultimately, I think certainly to sign him so Miami wouldn't sign him. Why wouldn't you do that? I mean, that's a smart business decision. If you're going to criticize Larry Bird for being a blank blocker, I mean, that's on you. But I think he is a little bit more injured. I think they knew he was injured when they signed him. But if there was a chance he could play, you certainly don't want him matching up against Roy Hibbert, because as we've seen, you never know where his head's going to be. So to criticize Larry Bird for not speaking to the media, which he speaks to WIBC, by the way, or, you know, signing Andrew Bynum because he didn't sign him, who gives a rat's ass? He's on the Pacers. If he doesn't play, he doesn't play, but he's not on Miami. Smart business move.
Right, absolutely. All right, Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show. Jason, we're going to give you the final word on the Pacers tonight. It's the Pacers, the Hawks, Game 1, NBA playoffs. The drama starts tonight, sir.
Yep. You know, there's a reason why Golden State and the Clippers and these high-gunning offensive teams very rarely win a championship. The game slows down. When you get to the postseason, those dunks become fouls. Those drives to the baskets become elbows. When the game slows down, that favors the team with the bigger, stronger defense and the more tough and rugged bigs. Now, maybe Roy Hibbert doesn't fall in that category, but Jan Mahimi's got six fouls, just like Roy Hibbert's got six fouls, and David West may be the most underrated player in the NBA. The game slows down. That favors the Pacers. They've got better defense. They could even lose tonight, and they still win in six.
All right, Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show. Jason, real quickly, we know that we've mentioned here that people can find you at hammerandnigel.com, but where can people find your work, your masterpieces, follow you, stalk you, what have you?
Sure. Go to Twitter, follow us at Hammer and Nigel, all one word. Same thing on Facebook, facebook.com/hammerandnigel. And you can also hear me every once in a while on 93.1 WIBC, and check out the shows at hammerandnigel.com.
Jason, I really appreciate you joining us, and go Pacers, buddy.
Amen, my friend. Have fun tonight.
All right, man. Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show. Great to have him on, Josh. Always a great great guest, if you will. Well, Josh, real quickly, what were your thoughts? Hammer, have it right, have it wrong? What are your thoughts?
I absolutely love having Jason Hammer on. I thought it was great. We need to have him more often. Maybe we can get him to be a regular on our Saturday show. And he has the funniest show you can listen to here in Indianapolis. But
I love Hammer. He's one of my favorite guests, and he's also a friend. Me and him go back a good number of years, and I love having him here on the show with us. Well, guys, my name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. We'll be back for our last half hour right around the corner. Assistant coach of the Indiana Ice is going to be joining us, talking with us about their playoff hopes as they get geared up for Green Bay right here on the Balance Radio Network. Firecracker ready to go. I love to stay in chat, but it ain't like that.
Light Carb Day concert at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, starring the Red Rocker, Sammy Hagar, and the Wobbo. And Sublime with Rome. Friday, May 23rd, Sammy Hagar and the Wobbo. And Sublime with Rome. Get more info at ims.com/carb day.
Soccer is the world's game.
And it has deep roots in Indiana.
It lives in our backyard.
In our rec league.
In nuestras escuelas.
Indy 11 is here.
And make no mistake, this is Indiana's team.
It was built from the ground up.
Brick by brick by soccer fans. When we take the field next April, we'll be playing for you.
For me. Para mí.
For us.
This is my team.
Este es mi equipo.
This is our team.
This is your team.
It's time.
It's going to be awesome.
I'm going to be there.
Voy a estar ahí. I'll be there.
This isn't just any soccer team. This is Indiana's team, and that includes you.
For over 100 years, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway has been the epicenter of racing.
with the highest forms of motorsports all competing at Indy.
And Tony Kanaan has won the 97th running of the Indianapolis 500.
Over a century ago, the Speedway's designers had visions of a road course nestled inside the famed oval. Now, for the first time ever, the stars of the Indianapolis 500 will also run on the road course circuit.
It's so different than the Indy 500, I don't think it takes away from that. You can't even compare it to the oval. It's so different.
IndyCar drivers are the fastest and most versatile in the world. And now we'll be challenged by the 2.5-mile oval and the road course, both at the racing capital of the world.
Why not use this facility as much as you can? And this makes a lot of sense in my mind. And so if we have a chance to come here and race on the road course, hey, I'm all for it.
Next May, the racing action starts with the inaugural Grand Prix of Indianapolis.
It's pretty physical. There are a lot of fast corners. It's hard on your neck. Heavy braking into turn one. It's a good track.
This history-making event takes the green flag on Saturday, May 10, 2014. For the latest information, go to gpofindianapolis.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
All right, my minions, welcome back to the Balance. My name is Tom Martin with thanks so much to Jason Hammer joining us this last half hour, talking with us of the Hammer Nigel show, talking with us about the Pacers and the playoffs. Well, I'll tell you what, they aren't the only ones in the playoffs right now. I'll tell you what, I'm pleased to be joined now by Adam Krog, the assistant coach for the Indiana Ice, and also $2 Bill Josh is joining us as well. Adam, how are you doing, sir?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, and so good that you could take time out of your very busy schedule to join us here. And I know that you guys air on Indiana Talks, and of course, we air on Indiana Talks as well. And I've been talking with Gary about you guys and about the Indiana Ice. We haven't had a chance to have you on for a while. I have someone on, from the Ice on for a while. So I thought this was a great opportunity to talk with you about the Indiana Ice and what's been going on in 2014. And certainly a very exciting playoff series for you going on right now up there in Green Bay. So talk with us a little bit about your playoff series, hopes, aspirations, and what can we look for from the Indiana Ice moving forward from tonight?
Yeah, well, fortunately, we closed out the series last night, closing out in four, best of five, and it was a pretty tough series. We won game one back in Indy with a 2-0 shutout. The next night, we had some unfortunate bounces at home and lost 6-5 ultimately. We were down 4-1 and then down 6-3, and we came all the way back, had some good chances to tie it late. And just couldn't get the deal, just couldn't get all the way back there. And then we had to come all the way up to Green Bay on Thursday. We won Thursday 1-0, and then again last day with a repeat performance with another 1-0 shutout. So hats off to our goaltending and our defense. We were able to close the series out. So now we're sitting here and waiting to see who wins the series between Cedar Rapids and Dubuque.
Well, we're talking with Adam Krog. First of all, Adam, am I saying your name right? I don't want to butcher it because I have a bad tendency of doing it. It's a bad habit of mine. your name right?
Krog. Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah.
Well, certainly that win certainly launched you in to the finals. And congratulations to you to being into the Eastern Conference Finals. Let me ask you this. You guys are going to kind of be competing against the Pacers as far as fan attention. So you both trying to, of course, the Pacers are trying to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals. Do you find being in a city the size of Indianapolis that you guys ever have to compete with another type of fan base?
Well, that's, you know, that's some of the challenges that you get in a lot of cities. I don't know if we look at it as competing with the Pacers, for instance. I mean, obviously two different sports, and the Pacers are on that major league level. And, you know, our players are amateurs. Our kids are aspiring to go to college. And, you know, at this point, 90% of our teams got Division I scholarships. And some will be taken off next year for that. Some will be taken off in 2 years for that. So I wouldn't say that we compete with the Pacers or anybody else like that. I mean, it's nice when there's not another game going on in town, and we might have a little bit of a bigger draw on that given night. But, you know, it's definitely one city, and you know, I think that we definitely cheer for the Pacers and the Colts, and I think it goes the other way as well.
Well, also joining us is my partner in crime, Mr. $2 Bill, Josh. Josh, go ahead, fire away to coach here with the Indiana Ice. I know he's very, very busy, so we want to make sure that we get all of our questions into him. Go ahead, Josh.
I wanted to ask you about the two star players. Well, the goalie's been the star player the last couple of nights, and that'd be Jason Pavlovsky. Hopefully I said his name close to right.
Yep.
And Dennis Smirnov. Are they going to be back next year? Are they NHL prospects? Are they going to college? Because it appears that there's a lot of USHL players who do get drafted by NHL teams. So could they be drafted by an NHL team and bypass college, or do they have to go to college first? How does that work?
You don't have to go to college first. The draft in the NHL is a little bit different than the likes of the NBA and the NFL. Our players get drafted. They're eligible to be drafted at 18. You can be drafted at 19 and 20. So there's kind of a three-year window, and it doesn't matter if you go to college or not. That team that drafts you gets your rights for the next, until you finish your collegiate career. And then if they don't sign you once your four-year window of college is up, then you become a free agent. As for the two players that we were just talking about, Jason Pulaski, our goalie, he's on the NHL Central Scouting list. Will he get drafted? I don't know. We'll have to see. But he's definitely helping his cause right now, and a couple of shutouts in the playoffs certainly go a long way, and I'm sure a lot of people are taking notice. As for Denis Smirnov, he's a youngster. He's the 16-year-old. He's a 1997 birth year. This year, the early half of the 1996 kids are draft eligible. So Dennis is about it. Actually, he's 2 years away because he's a late 97. Like, he just turned 16 back in November, I believe. So he's still got a little bit of time to wait, but he's a special player. He's got a hockey IQ that you wish all your players had. He's a little bit undersized, but I mean, he's a bit of a wizard out there with the puck. Like, he's fantastic. What a great player. What a great kid.
And I know that this kind of runs in the family with you, and your brother also plays for the Boston Bruins. If I'm not mistaken, he not used to also play?
Yeah, Tori played for the Ice back in, I think it was 2008-09, and they won the Clark Cup, actually. So he's got a USHL title under his belt, the Clark Cup, and now I'm sitting here battling a few years later as a coach, trying to do the same thing, trying to get a second Clark Cup in the Krug family. And ironically, at the same time as he's in the midst of his second NHL the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Now, how special is that? Obviously, we see brothers in other sports, predominantly, obviously, Eli and Peyton Manning. But how special is that, especially this time of year, 1 year later from Boston, Tori out there in Boston, you here in Indianapolis? What are some of the things that Tori can bring to your team and help your team develop so that they at that level? And what are some of the things that you tell them as well? And is there that communication or pep talks, if you will, from Tori to the...
Yeah, I mean, not so much with our team. Fortunately, earlier this season, we were heading out to Cedar Rapids, and we took the team to a St. Louis Blues-Boston Bruins game on our way. We left a day early and got into St. Louis, and were fortunate enough to practice at Scott Trade Center, watched the Bruins practice in the morning, and then we watched the game that night. You know, Tori stepped in and said hello to the boys, and I think that that's really neat for our guys. They're obviously in a very relatable situation. You know, Tori was here just 4 years, 5 years ago, so it hasn't been all that long. And so I think that when the guys see an NHL player come into the room, they say, well, why not me? You know, and then as far as how that's related to us going down the stretch, you know, it's been really nice to be able to say, you know, guys, I know how it is at the next level. I didn't play there, but Coach Brown, our head coach, did. He played there. He played in the NHL for 12, 14 years, something like that. So he's got a lot of experience. And then obviously my experience with my brother, there's lots of knowledge coming down from him and stuff that I'm picking up along the way watching him, and I'm learning as well. So it's good to relay the messages that he's getting up at the major league level, and we can relate it to our players.
Now, as you move forward into the playoffs, what are some of the keys that you guys have to focus on? I mean, you got to play your game. You got to play ice hockey, and no pun intended. That totally didn't mean the way I meant. But you got to play the game that you guys are designed to play. And see, the ice are in the Eastern Conference. It's a whole new for the Indiana Ice to be there. Talk with me a little bit about what your strategy is moving forward into the finals to become champions.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. We definitely have to worry about ourselves first and foremost, play our style of hockey. Where there is a little bit more attention to detail going into the playoffs as far as what the other teams are doing or their strategies and how we're going to counter that. But at the end of the day, like, we feel that we're a pressure team, and we need to do the small things and get pucks behind their defensemen and use our big, strong, fast forwards to get in on the forecheck and play, you know, in their zone. That's the type of team we are, where we can build momentum with all four of our lines and just keep coming at them wave after wave. You know, but at the end of the day, you just can't worry too much about what the other team's doing. There's a reason that we were in first place going into the playoffs, because we were very good within our own system, and we need to stay focused on ourselves.
Now, I know you guys are a Tier 1 junior ice hockey team that was formed back in 2004. Can you talk with us a little bit about what a Tier 1 junior ice hockey team is and what the path to succeed or what the line of succession, if you will, might be the better way to put it, that feeds into the NHL? NHL, I'm sorry.
Yeah, So the structure of USA Hockey is there's different levels of youth hockey all the way up. We basically scout the AAA levels for players to come up to our league, and there's three tiers of junior hockey in the United States: Tier 1, 2, and 3. Tier 1 is definitely the highest. All of our players, not all of them, but you know, 90-95% of our players in our league go on to Division I college, some on full ride scholarships, some on partial, and a lot of them are, well, I'd say all of them are probably aspiring to play in the National Hockey League at some point. There's at any given night, there's, you know, anywhere between 5 and 20 NHL teams in the door. I mean, there's been some nights where we've been playing other top teams in the league, or we've been playing the United States National Development Program, which has a team in our league. And there's been 20 NHL teams in the door, and they're knocking on our office door after the game saying, we want to talk to this guy or that guy, because they've got thoughts of drafting that player. Ultimately, Tier 1 junior hockey is that everything is paid for our players. The ownership does a fantastic job. All their hockey gear is paid for, all their ice time. Their living situation is paid for. We've only got one player on our team from Indianapolis, from Carmel, actually, and the other 22 were all from other areas, Detroit, Chicago, Boston. We've even got the Denis Smirnov kid we spoke about earlier. He is a Russian, naturally. His sister and him moved over here about 4 years ago in hopes to go to college on a scholarship. So there's a lot of dedication to these kids. For all intents and purposes, they're pro hockey players. It's a job. And some of them are still in high school, so they have double duty. I mean, they're always at school, and they're always, they're always doing their homework. They're bringing their homework on the bus, on the road, doing it in the hotels. And you know, at the end of the day, they are here to develop as hockey players, though. So it's a fantastic league. It's very professional. You can't say enough about it, and truthfully, it's the best junior hockey league in the United States.
Well, and I can imagine you've got some great leadership. Obviously, your assistant coach there, but your head coach, Jeff Brown, certainly has an extensive history in hockey and really on all levels. So really knows how to train and develop your young players. So I wish you the best of luck. Josh, we've got time for one more question for Adam. Adam Croak, assistant coach for the Indiana Ice, as they prepare for the Eastern Conference Finals. Josh, go ahead.
Well, I've been to several ice games this year. I would say you guys play a little bit like the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. I imagine you've been watching a little bit of the NHL playoffs. So I have a question for you. It's not really related to the ice, but it kind of is. I know you guys are in the playoffs. Any chance you're going to be able to get up to Boston tomorrow for Boston-Detroit game two, or are you going to have to watch it on TV?
I'll be watching it on TV. I'm actually in Chicago with my wife's family for Easter tomorrow. So I'll be catching it on TV. Tonight, actually, I'm heading out just to Dubuque to watch Cedar Rapids and Dubuque play their game four. Just kind of get a little scouting report for us and start preparing for next Friday's tilt back in Indy. So unfortunately, I won't be out to Boston, but at some point here, I hope to catch a game. And then as long as we go all the way here and Boston's still alive in 3-4 weeks, I'll definitely be catching a bunch of games because at that time Boston hopefully will be in the conference final or the Stanley Cup final.
Adam Krogh, the assistant head coach, assistant coach of the Indiana Ice, preparing for the Eastern Conference Finals. Adam, here recently with the Olympics out in Sochi, was there any bets or side bets or rivalries going on or fist fights or anything going on there when the hockey games were on?
No, there absolutely was. Our owner, Paul Scott, is Canadian, and Coach Brown is Canadian, and so they would kind of give me crap every day, you know, about being an American and how's the American team going to do all that. Mr. Scott even went as far as making a little friendly bet. He took Canada and Russia, and he gave me my choice of any teams I wanted, and I took the United States and Sweden, and unfortunately it didn't work out for me. But it was a fun little wager, and when the United States played Canada in the semifinal game, the whole team went over to Mr. Scott's house and watched it on the big flat screen. And we've got a few Canadian boys on the team and the Russian and then a bunch of Americans. So it got a little rowdy down there. Didn't have to break up any fights, but at the end of the day, it was a lot of fun.
Well, let me ask you something on the serious note, and I know you're real busy, so we'll let you go. Your brother, Tori, plays for the Boston Bruins. This marks the one-year anniversary of the Boston bombings. What's the atmosphere with him? What are some of the things behind the scenes they relayed to you about playing in Boston at this time of year?
Yeah, well, it's such a tight-knit city. The people in Boston are just one of a kind. They're really special. In my mind, learning what Tori has taught me about some of the stuff that goes on there and seeing it firsthand. My wife and I flew out there last year when he was called up for the playoffs. In the New York Rangers series, and we went out there, and you just saw the camaraderie of all the people, and they were still, you know, having the Boston strong lights on the ice, and they had their moment of silence, and the national anthem was a big deal. They brought some of the people that were injured in the bombing out on the ice to hold the flag or just be part of the pregame ceremony. So it's absolutely unbelievable to see the way that city has come together. You know, some of the things Tori's seen while he's been there. He said it was pretty eerie for the few days, you know, following the bombings. And it was obviously pretty devastating to the area. But, you know, why they're such a tight group, that town, those citizens. And, you know, they bounce back, and they're going to keep bouncing back. And, you know, it's just neat to be a part of it, I guess.
Well, certainly it is just a special team to play for, and certainly they're getting ready to go against the Red Wings. I don't need to ask you who you're rooting for in the Stanley Cup chase this year, do I?
Well, I'm from Detroit. I grew up a Red Wings fan. Tori grew up a huge Red Wings fan, and it's one of his favorite players growing up was Pavel Datsyuk. And wouldn't you know it, Datsyuk scored the game-winning goal last night with about 3 minutes left. Fortunately for the Krug family, Tori wasn't on the ice, so it wasn't his fault. But, you know, it's a team game, and obviously it's devastating to lose a game one at home and lose home ice advantage. But hopefully Tori can, get the job done tomorrow and then bring it back to Detroit where he'll have tons of family and friends up at the game.
Well, we're looking forward to following you and also all of our Indiana Talk fans that listen to us here on Indiana Talks as well between 1 and 3 in our tape delay broadcast that they air for us. I know that they run all of your games, I believe, and so certainly we're excited to follow the Indiana Ice through the playoffs. And I appreciate you taking some time, Adam, to be on our show. I know we're a national show, but I wanted to take some time to shine on some of our local guys and the young kids that are really have a lot of big aspirations. Adam, where can people find your work? I always say your work and your masterpieces. Follow you, stalk you on social media, what have you.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said, where can people follow you, stalk you, or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
On Facebook, social media?
Yeah, my Twitter is Krug39, K-R-U-G-39. The Indiana Ice are on there as well, at Indiana Ice. And then we've got our Facebook page as well.
Adam Krug, we appreciate you joining us. Good luck to you and to the Bruins both, sir.
Thanks for having me on, fellas.
All right, buddy. We'll see you.
Assistant
head coach Adam Krug with the Indiana Ice talking with us about their aspirations going into the Eastern Conference Finals. Josh, it's always cool to get some people on more of the local level here in Indianapolis and give them an opportunity to talk about what they're doing and so forth with the Indiana Ice.
It is always incredibly cool and an honor to have people like that on the show. Maybe me and you can go out and catch one of the Eastern Conference Finals games next week, and I believe there'll be two of them back-to-back at home. But anyway, good luck to the Indiana Ice next weekend in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yep, they'll be here Monday night. And, Josh, yes, that could be arranged. If you want to go, I've got a set of tickets if you want to go. We'll talk about that off mic. All right, we got just a few minutes left. Josh, I tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and give you a 2 or 3 minute rant here, as we always do at the end of the show. So go ahead, rant away, sir. We'll give you about 2 minutes. Go.
Today would be a great day to call up Papa John's, Domino's, Pizza Hut, whoever your favorite pizza is. Open up some cold beers, some vodka, whatever it is you like to drink. You got Stanley Cup playoffs. You got MLB. You got the NBA playoffs today you got Oklahoma City and the Memphis playing. You got the LA Clippers and the Warriors. You got Pacers, Hawks. And you have Brooklyn Nets, Toronto Raptors getting it started at 12:30. You got 4 Stanley Cup playoff games tonight. So today is sports heaven. You also got a little bit of golf for those of you who like golf. Tonight at 7:30 on Channel 10 here in Indianapolis will be the Indy 11, their second game at home. Haven't got a chance to make it out yet. But Tom, there is plenty of sports on TV today.
Plenty of sports on TV today, which is what brings us to final segment, if you will. We got about 3 or 4 minutes where we do what's called the iPod Shuffle.
Where you heard about love and stop to the blind. My baby love and cause the sun to shine. And she my sweet little thing. She my pride and joy.
All right, iPod Shuffle is underway. Basically what we do for the next few minutes, we talk about just about anything. Just draw something out of a hat. So we'll start, since we're talking about the NBA playoffs. Josh, what kind of a grade do you give Jason Kidd as his year comes to an end with the Nets?
I'm sorry, Tom, I didn't hear what you said.
I said it's time for the iPod Shuffle. And so basically what we do is we just kind of dip into the hat, pull anything out of the hat that we can and talk about it for a minute or two. Jason Kidd, his first season as the Nets coach, has gone well so far, true or false?
And it's gone incredibly well. In fact, I expect the Brooklyn Nets to knock off Miami in the second round and make it to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Milwaukee Bucks, they sell their team. At least they've got a deal in place for $18 million. Part of that deal is to keep the team. Milwaukee, certainly, there have been such as Michael Jordan and other people have been to buy the team and move it out of Milwaukee. Good move to keep it in Milwaukee, or should they get it out of town?
I think it's a good move to keep them in Milwaukee. I'm not a big fan of teams going from one city to the next, even though my beloved Indianapolis Colts came from Baltimore. So in that one case, it's okay.
And now, in that one case. Well, now let's talk a little bit about this week. The San Francisco 49ers not talking about a contract extension with Kirkpatrick.
He hasn't earned one yet, plain and simple. The defense has got him to the Super Bowl. He choked in the playoffs last year. I don't blame him for not talking about a contract extension. If you want a contract extension, you go out and you earn one.
Well, how does he earn one? I mean, you get Super Bowl appearances? I mean, how does he earn one? Why?
You win the Super Bowl. That's how you earn a contract extension. You get paid to win the Super Bowl.
Did the Cincinnati Reds make a mistake of getting rid of Dusty Baker?
I absolutely do think they made a mistake, and karma's kind of funny right now. Say, I believe, Tom, you might know better than me, they have the worst record in baseball, or they're tied for the worst record in baseball.
Right there with the Chicago Cubs. And we talked about this on that corner, which you can hear every Thursday. And certainly the Cardinals fell again. So the Brewers are still hanging on to the number one seed in the National League Central. But, yeah, Carl has its way of coming back around, I guess. We'll see. One more sports story, Josh. Out of the hat, we'll let you pull it. Go ahead, go.
Speaking of the San Francisco 49ers, Tom, what do you think about their decision to not give an extension to Alden Smith, but they didn't cut him either after he was arrested for making a false bomb threat and carrying a gun through the airport? How do you justify keeping him?
I tell you what, you don't. They don't keep him. This is the end of the road for him and the San Francisco 49ers. Say what you want. They have sheltered him and have kept him under their little wing for so long. Now he's about to see what it's like when Daddy Harbaugh and the San Francisco 49ers say, "You're on your own, boy." So, yeah, he screwed up one too many times this time. He's done. He's over. He's toast. He's definitely toast with San Francisco 49ers. He's immature. He's stupid. He does some things like that that is totally unacceptable. It's not the first thing he's ever done. It's just everything's been pushed underneath the carpet with him. He's not fully exposed, and I don't know how much of a future he has left in the NFL. All right, Josh, real quickly. 30 seconds. We got 30 seconds. Go ahead and go.
I also want to give my condolences to Dan Dockich on the passing of his father.
Yes.
Dan Dockich is a great guy. If you get a chance, you should send condolences on Twitter at Dan Dockich or call into his radio show, as he's one of the most open mic people in the city. Takes just about everybody's call. But anyway, condolences go out to the Dockich family.
Absolutely, and certainly I can't imagine what it would be to lose your father, and especially on Easter weekend. Well, guys, that's going to do it for us. It is Easter weekend. I hope that everybody gets to church and does, and understands what Easter's about. It's more than just candy and Easter bunny and that sort of stuff. Certainly, I got my granddaughter a great Easter basket as well. But take some time this weekend. Go to church and worship and understand what the true meaning of Easter is. Remember, enjoy your family. Enjoy your time at home and whatever it is you're doing this Easter weekend. Do not drink and drive. It isn't cool. My name is Tom Marquis. I'll see you on Thursday for the Hot Corner right here on the Balance Radio Network. I'm out of here. Peace. Rock you like a hurricane.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.